Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews. Beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
As promised at the top of our show, we would have a special guest joining us from Milwaukee to get us updated on the Packers' big win here at Cowboys Stadium last Sunday. He covers them on a regular basis, and we are always thrilled when Tom Pippins of Fox 6 News in Milwaukee joins us. First of all, Tom, congratulations on Super Bowl 45. Definitely lived up to all the hype. And I'm just going to assume those Packer fans and your fellow Wisconsinites, there's a lot of smiles on those faces despite the cold temperatures and that frozen tundra up there by Lambeau Field.
You betcha, Big E. First of all, a joy to be back with you and your wonderful listeners. And it was so improbable, I felt, that everyone is just reveling in this. I know, again, we've said this on your show before, we sportscasters, some of us anyway, not you, are prone to overstatement. But I think if you look at where they came from with all the injuries, and then to be losing to Detroit, losing Aaron Rodgers, having to win the last two games just to get to the playoffs, the only NFC sixth seed ever to get to the Super Bowl and then to win it, it's just astounding, incredible. I think one of the more amazing seasons in franchise history, and I would dare say in recent NFL history as well.
You've been in Milwaukee close to 30 years. This is not your first Super Bowl to cover with Green Bay. Where does this particular one, where does it rank in the club's history?
Well, I have to think it's really right up there. You know all about the Packers' incredible background with the Super Bowls 1 and 2. And one of the highlights for me, Big E, was covering the wonderful breakfast that Athletes in Action puts on, the Super Bowl breakfast, and
yes,
the award, the Bart Starr Award given to Drew Brees. Just a tremendous quarterback and a tremendous person. He so impressed me on the Saturday before the big game, and to catch up with Bart. But those first two teams, you know, five championships for Vince Lombardi, first two Super Bowls, they beat Oakland, they beat Kansas City Stars, the MVP, and then they go through a drought of close to 30 years, and Brett Favre brings them back, and back-to-back. I think that certainly that Super Bowl 31 win at New Orleans over New England has to rate right near the top of the list because it had been so long. But I think in terms of not only waiting 14 years, but as improbable as it was, given the injuries and the adversity, I think the job that Mike McCarthy did as a leader, and I had my doubts, as many in Packer Nation did, could he and general manager Ted Thompson get them to the top, to the mountaintop? And I believe that the job he did in leadership was just phenomenal. When they had to go into New England without Aaron Rodgers, they had backup Matt Flynn and almost won that game. And before the game, they were saying, well, you're going to be a huge underdog. And he defiantly said, we are nobody's underdog. And remember, Mike McCarthy comes from Greenfield, Pennsylvania.
That's right.
He spent a few days there. Wonderful city, wonderful people, so many parallel similarities between the two areas, the two great, great franchises. And here's a kid who grew up just absolutely adoring and worshiping the Stillers, as they say there in Pennsylvania. Not the Steelers, but the Stillers. And then to go ahead and beat your hometown team that you pulled for in the Super Bowl. Magnificent, and the stage certainly was not too big for Aaron Rodgers. Everyone knows the history of being patient with Brett Favre and all the adversity with Brett going back and forth and waiting his turn and obviously putting himself among the elite now, not only winning the Super Bowl, bringing the Lombardi Trophy back home where, as everyone says here, it belongs, but winning the Super Bowl MVP.
Packer Nation, the celebration continues, and we are visiting one-on-one with Tom Pippins from Fox 6 right there out of Milwaukee. And, you know, Mike McCarthy, you just mentioned and talked about the head coach. He really was the ultimate prognosticator because you think back to the month of August, you know, end of July. I mean, there was a belief that, you know, he was going to lead this team to the Super Bowl, not just get there, but to win it all. He said it from the start.
He did. In fact, in the send-off luncheon, if you will, with the Chamber of Commerce, I believe it was, up in Titletown. They wore the cowboy hats, you know, symbolic of going to North Texas. And then right away in the first game of the season, they lose their franchise running back in Ryan Grant, and I will call him that. He was very underappreciated, but here's a young man who gained 1,200 yards three straight years, and he goes down. And they really didn't have a backup. And then a couple of games later or so, they lost the best tight end in football, arguably, and JerMichael Finley. So now you take those incredible weapons away from Aaron Rodgers. There was a period of adjustment. And then on defense, Big E, I mean, player after player went down, particularly among the linebacking core. And coordinator Dom Capers, I think, without Dom Capers, the Packers, believe me, do not make a resurgence. Once they hired him, this is the second year they ran that 3-4 defense, and the players really got it. And no matter who went down, they would just they'd take people off the street, you know, and they were doing the job. And I believe in a fantastic way. And I think what really is, as much as I have great respect, again, for the Steelers and the wonderful organization, the fabulous fans, everyone said, in fact, Tunch Ilkin, the former Steeler and a play-by-play analyst, if you will, on the radio broadcast, stood up there at the prayer breakfast and said, or the Super Bowl breakfast, and said, I believe that we're going to win, the Steelers are going to win, because we're going to beat, we're tougher at every position. And I certainly respect it. Everyone talks about Pittsburgh and how tough they are. But actually, the Packers out-physicaled the Steelers, and that was a big part of the victory.
I want to talk some more about your quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, as you had said, this is a team that had to endure so much adversity with the injuries, but just the rapid ascension of him. I mean, truly one of the league's best young quarterbacks, and, you know, he shined the brightest when the stage was the biggest.
Exactly. And, you know, when he came out there, I watched him in warm-ups, and I didn't see. Sometimes that can be deceiving, as you know. You've been there and done that as an athlete. But you look at his eyes, the close-up with the cameras and all, even though we're up in the auxiliary press box there. He was smiling, seemingly very relaxed in his first Super Bowl game in front of, what, 103-some thousand people and millions and millions and millions. What was it? North of 150 million around the world at times.
Right.
And I just think he held the bull by the horns. He was a little bit, as he said, amped up, overthrew a couple of receivers early, but settled down. And they put the game, Big E, on his shoulders, and number 12 delivered. Here's a young fellow who's very grounded, Chico, California, always had a bit of a chip on his shoulder because from the time he was in junior high, there was always somebody that they had in mind who was better. And he had to overcome, you'll recall, draft day back in 05, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
And he was supposed to be the number one pick, he or Alex Smith, to the 49ers. Well, history, of course, has been recorded. Smith went to the Niners. He basically has been a bust. They're still trying to get it done now with Jimmy Harbaugh there as the head coach. He slips all the way to 24, and he said to Ted Thompson, the GM, I will not disappoint you. You'll not regret this day. And when he had the opportunity and when they traded Brett Favre, he came to him again and said, I appreciate the faith and the confidence in me. You won't regret this move. By golly, he has, I think now it's just a matter of, and this has been the big deal the last couple of days, sustaining the success. Because when they get these players back, they have some incredibly tough roster decisions to make. And Big E, you know the history of Super Bowl champs. It doesn't work out too well the next year, even I think to win a postseason game. But I think this team, and I think Mike McCarthy is a man who can manage this success, could be very interesting. Maybe they can have a little dynasty here. Maybe not.
Perhaps there could be a dynasty there, but I really like what Aaron Rodgers has already said. You know, this Super Bowl, you know, they're already looking past that now. The challenge for him is repeating, scrutinizing this season, and finding ways to get better. That's a winner's mentality.
You are so right, and that's what they said. What is your motivation? You've always had that motivation, somebody passing you over. I mean, when he went to California, they actually went to junior college first, and he joked, he says, a lot of guys go to junior college to get their grades up. My grades were fine. I was just trying to get better and get people to notice me, and I think they were there to look at a receiver or a tight end, and they ended up giving Aaron Rodgers a call. It's just been the way for him. And even Mike McCarthy was with San Francisco at the time, so he still jokes. They thought more highly of Alex Smith, so that's my edge. So now, as you say, it's let's repeat this. Let's try to get better. So he is motivated. He's always looking for that edge. And I think that he is in a position as someone who's so grounded in his faith, as a rock-solid person. He's emerged as a leader this year. It had an awful lot to do with the victory. Big E, you know the story in the Super Bowl. Charles Woodson goes down. Donald Driver goes down.
Right.
The top receiver, one of their very best defensive backs, and they're not going to play in the second half. The emotion in the locker room, Woodson trying to say a few words to the team with that broken collarbone, too choked up to say anything. And then they said to Aaron Rodgers, go over there and say something. He said, what do you say to him? He walked up and he said, Wood, I'm just so sorry this happened, but we're going to celebrate at the end, and we're going to win the Super Bowl for you and for Drive. And they did. Wonderful, wonderful story.
It is a tremendous story. Tom Pippin's with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. Only have a few more moments with Tom Pippin's. Share a little bit for all of our listeners. What is that experience like for you as a journalist to be covering these athletes? You cover them every single week. How do you keep your emotions in check and remain journalistic?
Well, remaining journalistic isn't too hard, but keeping emotions in check, Big E, you know, I'm a frustrated jock who loves people. We talk
right.
about this. You're a great jock or jockette who loves people, and you're great at your job. So I just, my stomach churns. I said, I'm getting too old for this stuff, you know, and here it comes. Oh, Big Ben's got the ball. They're going to drive down. They're getting, you know, another game winner just like he did in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago or so against Arizona. And the Packers D makes a stop. But the entire experience, the enormity of it all, you know, I mean, I had a chance to interview Jordan Sparks and Adam Sandler, for goodness sake.
Wow.
The celebrities everywhere.
What was that like?
At Media Day. Can you imagine me with Jordan Sparks? A good thing her daddy played for the Giants in the defensive backfield, you know. We had a little bit in common. What a lovely young lady. And I love your area out there. I just absolutely love Big D. I know we brought the weather with us. It was a lot colder than we expected. We're out there freezing, doing live shots, but it was fabulous. The people of Texas, wonderful. Being in Fort Worth, I got to ride a steer. I mean, it's just the entire experience. And then 5,000-some-odd media people. They had 100 in Super Bowl I. I mean, it was like cattle, the long, long line. We hardly saw the end of the game, never saw the celebration, just waiting to get permission to go out. Everybody setting up their live shot locations. And I think the moment I'll remember is being on the field at the end, even well after the Super Bowl presentation of the Lombardi Trophy, and the joy of these players, veterans and youngsters alike, and A.J. Hawk with their little baby, their first child, holding like holding a piece of cake in his hands, you know, just talking away, smiles on their faces, and a good group of guys with great character. And I think that entire experience is one that's, it may rate as the highlight of my career on a personal, selfish note, I guess you'd say. And just feel blessed as can be to be there, and to be there in North Texas, where the people are just, and we're fantastic.
My final question for you is, talk to us, give us some insight on Clay Matthews. This is a young man raised on football, a family that has three generations of NFL players. How special is Clay?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to think that his grandfather played, his father played, his uncle's in the Hall of Fame. Between the two of them, uncle and father, I think they had almost 40 years of service, Big E, in the NFL.
Incredible.
And never won a championship. So he said before the game, if we can win this championship, this is for them as well as for myself. And here, too, is a young man. He was small. He was light. He didn't even start in high school when his father was the defensive coordinator. It took him 3 years to really get on the field on a regular basis at USC. Ted Thompson, the GM, did something totally out of character a couple of years ago when he traded up in round one to pluck him. And boy, oh boy, that turned out to be one of the best moves ever. Don't have to say much about this kid. He finished second to Troy Polamalu, as many of the NFL fans know.
Only by two votes.
Defensive Player of the Year honors. He was just magnificent. Such a, they call him a claymaker. And he's just unbelievable. In fact, I think he's going to be on the Ellen DeGeneres show tonight, for anyone who may be interested. Another Big E, but not as big as you are.
Oh, you're so sweet. Hey, Tom Pippins has been along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. You can check out all of his good stuff at Fox 6 in Milwaukee. You can go to their website. Where's your website, Tom?
It's fox6now.com, Big E.
You got it. We'll catch up with you again real soon, and hopefully we'll be talking some Brewers baseball. I'm ready for spring, aren't you?
Oh, boy, I'm with you there, and best to you and the listeners. It's always a blessing for me. Appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Stay close.
The Big E Sports Show with Elissa Walker-Campbell is the biggest names in sports.
Delivering the insight.
Delivering the insight you won't find anywhere else.
Anywhere else.
Like TCU head football coach Gary Patterson,
Texas A&M great R.C. Slocum,
and Big E's regular guest of ESPN Radio, better known as the Double Nickel, Jason Peter. The Big E Sports Show
with Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Miss one episode and you miss the game.
Elissa Walker-Campbell
to deliver sports the way you want it.
Big names, bold interviews.
Ow. Beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
And we want to welcome you back this weekend to another edition of the fastest hour in sports talk radio, the Big E Sports Show. And without question, it has been an incredible couple of weeks here in North Texas with the Super Bowl, all the festivities. But we can't overlook and forget last week. It was very special in itself when you talk about college football and National Signing Day. The 2011 class, it shines very brightly here in the Lone Star State. And it is always a pleasure when we can welcome back to our program nationally known and recruiting expert from CBS College Sports, Mr. Tom Lemming. Tom, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, real good. Hanging in there. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing fine. I wanted to ask you, you've been able to exhale a little bit from all the craziness of last week and all those college recruits are now signed and inked?
Well, actually, the 6 days after that, I started doing junior recruiting, so I just got back home a day or so ago and planning another trip to hit the deep south. So trying to get the whole country for next year done by May 1st.
It never ends. Well, before we talk about the conferences, the schools, and who where the players went to, you have been covering the recruiting scene for over 30 years, and I just wanted to kind of get your take and perspective on how much it has changed since those early days. I mean, today there's so many outlets, media sources, and recruiting services, and you know they're able to pinpoint those outstanding athletes. Just talk about how it's evolved.
Well, I think they're able to get out the news a little bit quicker, and I think it's more the camps and individual coaching that the ball players are getting that gets them out a little bit more now. It's tough to find a diamond in the rough like it was 10 years ago. Most of the time, the ball players are very visible because of their because of the media right now and because of the camps and the personal trainers.
You know, we have a lot of parents, Tom, that tune into our program. I know they're wanting to know this question and the answer. You know, with the recruiting process, what is the athlete's most important time when being recruited, making a name, you know, getting that national exposure and to be able to showcase your skill level to those college coaches?
I think their junior year now is more important than their senior year. Just starting with the season and then right after the season when the coaches are coming to watch them on film and offer them scholarships, the process has been pushed up about a year now. Before, they used to wait until after the senior campaign. Nowadays, they wait, when the ball players are juniors, really, even before the junior year, they're identifying them and keeping track of them, and the scholarships start getting offered, at least verbally now, during their junior year.
You talk about how key the junior year is. How young are they starting to take a look and evaluate some of this talent? Any crazy stories to share with us, Tom?
You've always heard the crazy stories about 7th and 8th graders being offered scholarships by USC or other people, but that's you know, just one in a million. Most of the time, the college coaches have enough on their hands to deal with the seniors and the juniors. They'll keep an eye on the sophomores, and if there's a freshman that all of a sudden nationally becomes a big name, they'll keep an eye on him. But for the most part, 99% of their time is spent with the junior and senior class.
I know your focus is obviously college football, but we actually had a 7th grader that had verbally committed down here in Texas to play golf at the University of Oklahoma. Unheard of.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully he keeps progressing to be real good or else Oklahoma will be stuck with a very average golfer.
Tom Lemming is along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. He is nationally known, recognized as the country's leading expert when you talk about college football recruiting and high school talent. You can watch him on CBS College Sports. He is their football recruiting analyst. And let's get your thoughts on some of the conferences, the schools, how they fared, how they did. Obviously, our home base with our show is right here in Fort Worth. And let's highlight TCU. They signed 24 players. They signed 3 4-star status players. Evaluate this class and how this team and program, they just continue to build on that momentum of an undefeated season and a Rose Bowl win.
Yeah, they actually put together a typical TCU class. The ball players are considered maybe 4 stars only because the TCU recruited them. If they hadn't had success, they probably, you know, everything's arbitrary when it comes to these stars. And if you notice, a lot of guys get their stars moved up if they commit to a dominating team. So a lot of times it's just all opinion and very arbitrarily thrown out there. But the fact is, they recruit well every year. They recruit athletes, and they recruit guys that fit perfectly into their system. And this class is typical of the last few years. It's just getting more publicity because TCU's success on the field.
And really, I mean, this is a program that prides itself on finding players, as you're talking about, you know, that have tremendous upside, overlooked athletes, and those hidden gems. You know, over those 24 players that they have signed, who do you think perhaps could kind of be that dark horse type of a player and really emerge and shine in that purple and white?
Well, you know, the guy, Ladarius Brown, who's an athlete on both sides of the ball, might be a great free safety or even corner, even a wide receiver out of Waxahachie. is a big-time ball player. I interviewed him over a year ago, and I knew he was one of the better players in northern Texas, and they got him away from some of the big Big 12 teams, which is quite a coup. Colby Griffin is a guy to keep an eye on, a cornerback from St. Pius in Houston. He can run a 4-4, and he's an outstanding all-around athlete. Overall, the class is very, very athletic. Cam White was a player interviewed from DeSoto who can fly, and he's tall, and he's got great hands. Quincy Aldridge had been offered a scholarship by Notre Dame, the DB out of White House. So you can tell, I mean, they got good ball players in this class, but it's a typical TCU class of very good athletes, particularly, and the majority of them coming from northern Texas.
One particular player that garnered a lot of attention was the fact that he switched his verbal commitment from Oklahoma to TCU, and that is the wide receiver Brandon Carter. How big was that? Obviously, that was huge, and it really shows that the perception of this program has really changed over the past 10 to 12 years.
I think so, too. He's small and explosive. Oklahoma had him, and I think he felt that there was too much talent at Oklahoma, and he'd get a better shot of playing at TCU right away. And since he is from North Texas, and the ULIS Trinity program is one of the best in the state, I think he's a great catch for TCU, and I think he'd be an outstanding cover corner or a receiver who's outstanding out in space. He catches the ball and shows terrific moves.
Let's move ahead. Let's talk about Texas. It's pretty remarkable that the Longhorns were able to weather the storm and hang on to so many of their key recruits with, you know, just the coaching carousel and the departure of so many key coaches with Mack Brown's program. Who are you really excited about that signed on with the Longhorns?
Well, first, Mack Brown's the best recruiter in the country, bar none. He's brought the Texas program up to the level of the elite, just a few elite. This year was sort of a bump in the road, but they'll be back next year. Every year they recruit well. Malcolm Brown's the key guy, the big running back who can run well between the tackles, but has the speed to take the ball the distance, and I think he can be an impact player as a true freshman. They really helped themselves offensive line-wise with some of the biggest names in the state. Cedric Flowers, Marcus Hutchins, and Garrett Greenlee are outstanding. Taylor Doyle and Josh Cochran. I thought that was probably the most impressive group that they've had with the offensive line group. But running back-wise, joining Malcolm is Joe Bergeron, who's another big back with a lot of speed and strength.
And that's pretty cool, too, that they signed Jordan Shipley's younger brother, Jackson Shipley.
Yeah, he was with us down in San Antonio at the U.S. Army game, and Jordan wasn't a super heavily recruited guy. He committed early to Texas. Jackson, sort of, somewhat the same way. He's living off his brother's name. Similar skills, though. Not quite as fast as his brother, but good hands, and he knows what to do with the ball after he catches it.
Tom, you've spent a lot of time, obviously, around Mack Brown. You said he is the best in the business when it comes to recruiting. What makes him so special?
He spends a lot of time at it, and also, like in everyday life, there's some really good people, some people that maybe aren't quite so good, some people that are phony, some aren't. He's a truly good person. I've known him for 25 years. He's a good guy. He puts a lot of time and effort into it. He's comfortable with ballplayers from every part of the country and every social standing. And also, I think he's an innovator when it comes to recruiting. I was in his office about a month ago, and I was amazed at sight, sound, and smell. It's the best football office I've seen for recruiting, with trophies and everything. The smell, the locker room even smelled nice. He said it's by design. People come in, and it's a sight, sound, and smell. And Texas has the best facilities in the country, and mainly because of Mack Brown.
That's kind of the strategy they use when you go to Neiman Marcus. You know, they got all these candles going on. It makes you shop more.
Exactly. And that's in recruiting. You visit a lot of schools, and the one that usually stands out, the ones that smell nice and look nice and shows you everything the school has to offer, and that's what Texas has.
I'm interested, educate me a little bit in terms of the recruiting process for Texas. When you look up and down their roster, it's all Texas kids. They only signed one kid out of Oklahoma. They don't diversify and try to go out of state. Why is that?
Well, you know what? The high school coaches would probably be upset. Texas Tech is doing it, and I think a lot of the high school coaches might be a little upset with Coach Tupperville about recruiting an awful lot in the Deep South instead of Texas. They want you, and like Mack Brown told me, if they go out of state, the ball player better be better than the ones that they're recruiting in Texas, or the coaches will be upset. Josh Turner was the best player in Oklahoma, so obviously he came. Last year they got Jordan Hicks out of Ohio, the Buckeyes Award winner, so no one's going to argue with that. And this year they had Christian Westerman, one of the three best offensive linemen in the country, committed for most of the year. At the very end, because they lost their O-line coach, he switched to Auburn, but he was from Arizona. But almost always they'll just take in-state ball players, and why not? Texas is the big name in the state. It's one of the top two states in the country for talent. So why leave the state and get the high school coaches upset with you?
You've highlighted some of the new fresh talent that will be coming on and being a part of the Longhorn program. Did you get a sense when you spent some time with Mac Brown, just so much kind of uncertainty coming into the 2011 season with so many new coaches? Are things stabilizing there? And is Coach Mac Brown, is he in a better mood?
I think he's in an exceptional mood, mainly because I think he's real happy with the new staff he's got together and excited about getting things going. Fresh blood also means guys that are going to be out there and putting a lot of enthusiasm, not only in coaching but in recruiting. So I think he's pretty happy with that, particularly with the defensive coordinator, Manny Diaz, who's famous for his coaching and recruiting ability.
Okay, my final question we want to talk a little bit about. We're going to head north, I-35, and go into Norman, Oklahoma. Let's talk about my Sooners. They made some big headlines, and I've kind of exhaled a bit because Oklahoma got some depth in the interior by signing three defensive tackles. Who can we look forward to next year on Bobby Stoops' roster?
Well, the guys you're talking about, really the defensive tackles could also be offensive linemen like Jordan Wade and Jordan Phillips are just real good athletes that play on both sides of the ball. And big-time player Jordan Phillips was considered the best athlete in the state of Kansas and a good catcher. Then the best player might be Trey Metoyer, a wide receiver who I've really liked for the past 2 years out of White House. He can fly. He's got great hands. One of the first players I selected for the U.S. Army game this year. And if you're looking for a sleeper, keep an eye on a guy named Derek Farniak out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. He's 6'9", 330, and he doesn't have an ounce of fat on him. He's got a great offensive tackle-type body, big-time ball player. But Oklahoma's, like always, they recruit well. Dan Tapko is one of the best players in Missouri as a defensive end, tight end. And they got two players out of Klein, Texas, Max Stevenson, a tight end, and his teammate Nathan Hughes, a defensive end, that are both very, very good ball players. So it was a very weak year in the state of Oklahoma. That's why I didn't see too many of their guys committed. I think they only had one or two of them committed from the state. So they just went into Texas and rounded up some blue-chip athletes.
You're right, Tom. They did sign 12 players from the great state of Texas, but it is interesting. Did Josh Heupel, a little recruiting connection there, going back to what, his home state of South Dakota?
Well, yeah, I think that's what it is. And, you know, obviously he got Derek Farniak, who was recruited by Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, all the schools around that area.
Right.
Those guys, the competition isn't great because they have trouble even fielding 11-man teams. A lot of times there's 8-man football up in the Dakotas. Well, believe me, they get great athletes that come out of there. Iowa and Nebraska profited for years, and now I think Oklahoma may take advantage of that.
Tom, as we get ready to sign off, direct all of our listeners where they can go and find out more information on all your recruiting reports. And what about the big screen, Blindside? That's over and done with. What other big projects you got going on, Tommy?
Well, I'm traveling now. We're doing summer school specials for CBS College Sports. I'll travel around, and we did one with Mac Brown last month, and it was great. Over there in Austin, and we're going to be bouncing around the country. I leave in a couple of days to junior recruit the Florida, Kentucky, Tennessee, South Carolina, and part of Georgia. So I'll be busy all the way up to May.
You don't have to be in the Windy City suffering in the freezing cold. And
I'm there right now. It's 10 degrees, and I'll be glad to get out of here.
Absolutely. Tom, thank you so much for dropping by. We look forward to catching up with you later this spring. Thanks again so much.
Hey, my pleasure. Take care.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Jason Peter will be joining us with our Under the Helmet segment. We will be right back.